Welcome to Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Greaves, and today we're joined by a very special guest to talk about how to help fix back pain. Our guest is Dr. Stuart McGill, professor of spine biomechanics at the University of Waterloo in Canada, and Dr. McGill has also been called the most widely recognized spine researcher in the world. After writing several highly regarded books for spine care professionals, he has just published his first book for the public called Back Pain or Back Mechanic, The Secrets to a Healthy Spine Your Doctor Isn't Telling You. Dr. McGill, welcome to Health Talk.
Yes. Hello, Brian. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. It's our pleasure to have you joining us today. I know I saw you speak in the past, and you have a wealth of great information here, so I've been really looking forward to speaking with you here today. And let's maybe start off by maybe giving our listeners a brief overview of where we're going with this, maybe some of the secrets to a healthy spine that you describe in your book. Are there, you know, six simple steps people can take to fix their back pain for good, or how does it work?
Yes, the word simple. When I first proposed this book for the lay public, the publishing houses said, oh, you have to have simple steps to get rid of back pain in the title in order to sell it. And I said, but that's a myth. It doesn't exist. The steps, they may be simple in principle, but they are not so simple in practice. And anyone who gets seduced by such a notion will most likely fail. The fact of the matter is back pain from damaged tissue or injury, it takes time to heal. And the curious thing about back pain is the more pain you have, the more the nervous system winds up the pain sensitivity. So the first of the simple steps, I suppose, is have a thorough assessment that identifies the motions, the postures, the loads that form the pain triggers. Then the second step is, based on those pain triggers, eliminate them. And here the listeners follow the second part of the book to practice spine hygiene. Getting on and off the toilet, in and out of the car, tying your shoes, all of these things that will trigger back pain in some people, we offer modified ways to do them to avoid the triggers. Now, this winds down the pain sensitivity. And then the third step is to build a foundation of pain-free movement, and that involves principles of creating spine stability, hip mobility, and that kind of thing. So the steps are simple, I suppose, in name, but in practice, the patient needs a guide.
No doubt about that. Now, well, follow-up question to that is, you said assess the triggers. Now, with back pain, you know, most people have read the common advice out there, you know, sit with good lumbar support, you know, bend at your knees when you lift. Are there different triggers in different people, or are the triggers fairly universal in back problems?
Well, yeah, that's a wonderful question. There is certainly no such thing as a non-specific back pain or general back pain. Back pain comes in many different flavors and categories. We offer the categories of intolerances to offending motions, postures, and loads. For example, some people say they had a disc bulge of the type that when they bend forward, and they don't realize when they're bending forward, sitting, for example, for a long time in front of the computer with stiff hips may cause the spine to bend forward and cause pain over time. Nonetheless, if they fall into that category of bending forward and then taking on more load and lifting a heavy object as they're bent forward, we would call that pain trigger flexion intolerance. So then we would show them how to avoid that trigger. Another, by the way, that's usually related to disc pain, and in people up to about 50, 55, maybe even 60 years of age. But after that, Another more prevalent category forms, and those are extension intolerant people when they bend backwards because now their spines might be a bit arthritic, and they would have to, well, again, we offer alternate movement patterns. So does that help clarify the triggers based on offending motions, postures, and loads? And they're a little bit different in everybody, but the trick is to make the person aware of what their triggers are and then coach them on appropriate spine hygiene to avoid those very specific triggers.
Yes, yes, that's very helpful. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the back pain itself and how muscles are related, because many people with back pain will say, oh, my muscles are so tight, and they feel like, you know, they always have to do a stretch. Is this true? Do tight muscles cause back pain? And if so, is stretching our spine good for it?
Beautiful question. Because most people perceive the pain is in their back muscles, but this is a little bit of a myth. Now, of course, muscle pain does exist on its own, but more often it is the result of some underlying pathology in the back that the person perceives as a pain in the muscles, and then they will try and stretch. But then the curious thing happens. Stretching the muscle fires off a stretch reflex. Some people perceive a stretch reflex as a signal to not go to that position, and yet another person with a slightly different neurological perception will perceive that as, oh, that stretch is a nice feeling, I'm going to do it a little bit more, not realizing that bending the spine in that way is causing the disc to perhaps bulge, press on the nerve roots, give the feeling of muscular pain. So what they are perceiving as relieving because of a stretch reflex that lasts for maybe 20 minutes or so, they are actually causing the pain to come back even more so once the stretch reflex has calmed down. So should they stretch? Again, depending on the category of their pain trigger, you know, if they perceive, say, a tight hamstring muscle, more often than not, but not always, but more often than not, the tight hamstring is a result of a tight nerve, a sciatic nerve that goes down the back of the thigh in the same place as the hamstrings. And when you measure it appropriately, the clinician finds it's actually a tight nerve or an irritated nerve root. Now, you cannot stretch away neural pain or nerve pain. The way to get neural pain to desensitize is to stop stretching and stop moving it and just let it settle. So you see, Brian, the answer once again is it depends.
Well, but, this is very individualized, right? This
very much so, very much so.
No, that's a great answer. We need to take a short break and let our listeners, I think, digest that concept, because that's probably very new to many people here. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Dr. McGill about taking care of your back. Again, his book is Back Mechanic, available on Amazon. Welcome back to Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Greaves, and today we're talking with Dr. Stuart McGill, Professor of Spine Biomechanics at the University of Waterloo in Canada, author of the brand new book, Back Mechanic, The Secrets to a Healthy Spine That Your Doctor Isn't Telling You. And Dr. McGill, before the break, you presented us with some very thought-provoking information regarding stretching and how that works. Now, speaking of stretching, yoga has become a very popular activity, I'll say, recently, especially for people with spine problems. Can you give our listeners a little bit of insight into the effects of yoga on the spine?
Yes. Well, once again, I'm not evading the question at all. I'm just telling what the science shows, and the answer is it depends on the person yet again. Yoga, in its origin from India, was really designed or intended or part of the process of transcending the mind. Take the tension out of the body and let the mind transcend. And then the North American influence has been to change this and turn yoga into a healthy or a healing practice. But then let me explain a couple of principles as to why it depends. Take a thin willow branch. You can bend a thin willow branch back and forth, no issue whatsoever. But take a thicker branch, a stronger branch, and bend it to the same level, and it breaks and shatters. And the reason is tubes or structures, the larger they are when you bend them, the bigger the stress that occurs. So for a very thin-spined person, they would be quite unstressed bending their spine in yoga maneuvers. And yet, to take a thicker-spined, heavier-boned person, you can see that yoga would probably not be suited for them because it would create much higher joint stresses. And that's exactly what you see. If you take the average person and give them end range joint stretches, some will say, I like this, and others will say, hey, this really sets off my joints and causes me grief. Anyway, there's a start on the whole yoga discussion. There are many other issues to talk about, but once again, it's the same old thing. If it replicates pain or discomfort, it's probably not for you.
No, that's a good question, right? Kind of reminds me of the old joke, you go to the doctor and you say, doctor, it hurts when I do this, and what does the doctor say?
Don't do that.
Right. So in the book, you say that one of the most important things you want people to get out of your book is that instead of focusing on the title of their particular condition, like sciatica, for instance, we should turn our attention to focusing on the cause of the symptoms and addressing them directly. So can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what you mean by that and maybe illustrate it with an example?
Yes. Doctors will provide all kinds of Latin words to describe. I had one patient come in, I've got thoracic kyphosis. What can I do? And I said, well, that's just Latin for meaning you have a curve in your thoracic spine. And they didn't know what it meant. And it caused them great psychological dissonance or grief. If we, again, take the patient through a self-assessment and show them their pain triggers in terms of very specific motions, postures, and loads. Well, now they know what to do about that. They don't know what to do about sciatica or discogenic bulges, but they do know what to do about avoiding a certain pain trigger when it's described as a motion or a posture. So, back to what we said earlier, we know now for the patient what causes it, and then they can directly link that to activities. If bending forward and tying their shoe causes their pain triggers, they would probably be able to go for a walk. And walking is a wonderful exercise for a flexion intolerant type of back. It may not be the activity of choice for an extension intolerant back, for example. But anyway, it allows the patient to select alternate patterns and don't cause pain and let the pain sensitivity wind down. This is such a critical stage prior to the prescription of exercises. As I'm sure you do, you must have patients who call you and say, can you give me some exercises for my back? And my answer always is, no, I haven't a clue until I understand your pain triggers and we eliminate the cause. Then we will have a discussion about what the appropriate exercise for you is to build that pain-free foundation.
Absolutely. I think it's so tempting in this day and age for people to go look on the internet or just grab a, generic sheet of exercises. And of course, sounds like we've both seen where that leads, which is often not real helpful.
I see so much emotional and mental conflict unnecessarily created by the internet.
And speaking of the mental and emotional conflict, what about mental and emotional factors in back pain like stress or depression. How did those things, factors, contribute to the biomechanical problems in the back?
Well, the person going through the internet must be terribly confused on this, because there are some people who say stress and depression and psychosocial issues cause back pain. I really don't think the data supports that at all. What causes back pain are mechanical factors. How the person then deals with it will cause the psychosocial stress. So, for example, treating just the psychosocial and failing to address the offending mechanical triggers will probably result in a failed patient. But there's also some, what should I call them now, institutionalized processes. You may be familiar with work hardening programs. Here, they're usually run by insurance companies. So here's a person on back pain insurance or compensation. They get sent to a program where they have to complete exercises that increase in rigor every day. Well, some people thrive and do very well, but the biology will determine that. There are other people who, they won't do well on that. It is too much. The nature of their pain triggers and injury just doesn't allow for a daily ramping up on some theoretical insurance company schedule. So what happens to them is they say, I can't tolerate this anymore. It's too painful. And the insurance company kicks them out by saying, you are non-compliant with our exercises. Well, now you have a person in great emotional stress, and they've been labeled mentally weak or the pain is in their head when it wasn't. It was biology and mechanics that they just overdrove the pain sensitivity of their tissue at that particular time, and they failed. So this is very tragic for someone like me, and when I see these very mentally distraught patients coming in, we recognize the mechanical cause of their pain, try and eliminate it, show them how to move pain-free, and then all of a sudden they're sleeping without pain. They get their mental toughness back during the day because they're not sleep-deprived, and a lot of their mental anxiety disappears. But we didn't treat that as the first item. It was to really get rid of their pain first.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We need to take a short break, and then there's a couple other very important topics I want to ask you about when we come back. So we'll be right back with Dr. Professor McGill, author of The Back Mechanic. Welcome back to Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Greaves, and today we're speaking with Professor Stuart McGill of the University of Waterloo in Canada, and also author of the brand new book, The Back Mechanic, Secrets to a Healthy Spine That Your Doctor Isn't Telling You, available on Amazon and backfitpro.com. Dr. McGill, now, the past few decades, we've seen massive increases, at least in the United States, in the number of people who get MRIs on their spine for back pain. What effect have you seen this have? Has our technology helped us in diagnosing and treating these people with back trouble?
No, I think it's actually regressed us for a couple of reasons. You may have heard the old adage, if you want an excuse for surgery, go get an MRI. And the picture will show some anatomic anomaly. The surgeon or doc will put the scan up on the viewer, and without even looking at the patient, they will say, oh, well, you've got this or that, and I'm going to go in with a knife and cut the pain out. Well, those pictures don't correlate with pain for a lot of reasons. However, if the surgeon can correlate whatever anomaly they see on the MRI picture with the pain generator, the chance for a good surgical outcome is greatly increased. Have they helped practice? Was that the second part of your question?
Yes, yes. Sorry, that's all right. Yes, have we seen outcomes improve with people who've had the MRIs. Has that been a helpful advance?
Well, before MRIs became much more available, docs used to perform assessments on the patient, quite detailed assessments to find the pain triggers. And now they rely more and more on the pictures, and their diagnostic skills have been lost. So from that perspective, I think it's been a real step backwards. Now, of course, having said all of that, once in a while, there will be something observed on an MR. It might be a tumor or something that would be classified as a red flag. But usually the history and the patient presentation will show the skilled clinician that red flag as well. So I guess the bottom line is I never ask to see the medical images until I've examined the patient, precisely diagnosed their pain triggers, shown them what to do to eliminate them, and then I will, as a final step, see if the what the picture shows correlates or corroborates what we found clinically after a thorough exam of the patient.
Wonderful. I think that's a great practice. We have just a couple minutes left, so I wanted to ask, what parting words of advice would you leave for our listeners who might be suffering from back troubles? I know, a lot to ask for 1 minute.
Well, self-serving, but I mean, the whole reason I wrote the book was to give patients a plan to follow. And there's quite a bit of evidence. I just didn't write the book off our research. We actually followed up with every patient I've ever seen to see who got better and who didn't, what categories of pain responded to certain approaches and whatnot. And what I can say is that following the general plan in the book and creating the categories of back pain and addressing them appropriately results in 95% of people avoiding surgery out of the ones who had been recommended a surgical route. So I know those statistics, and that's why I wrote the book. So those are my parting words. Find your pain triggers, eliminate them, and build a pain-free foundation. Will you become forever bulletproof and pain-free? The reality is no, the patient will not. But they absolutely should be able to create a very resilient body and do the things that they want to do in life. We've had athletes return to virtually every Olympic sport, every professional sport. We've had one power lifter go back and set the world record. We've had Olympic lifters do the same. This is not a life sentence. It absolutely can be managed to very subclinical levels and get back to life if you can learn to avoid those specific pain triggers.
I think that's a great message to leave our audience with, and I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your very busy schedule. I know you lecture all over the country and world on this topic, and for listeners who want more information, again, the book is called Back Mechanic, available on Amazon as well as backfitpro.com. Until next week, this has been Dr. Brian Greaves for Health Talk.